You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. LA's new mayor, Karen Bass, got elected by promising to take on the homelessness crisis, and she has been busy. Last month, she announced Inside Safe. That's an initiative that aims to rapidly shelter thousands of people now living in tents or encampments.
The vast majority of people living on the streets say yes to real offers of housing and support. It's time for a unified, strategic, and citywide approach to homelessness.
But what does that look like? KCRW's Zoe Matthew saw it in action recently in Venice, where sanitation crews dismantled one large encampment she visited with unhoused people as they moved into shelter. And she heard from Venice homeowners afterwards, and she joins us right now. Hi, Zoe.
Hi, Steve.
So what does this new Inside Safe program look like on the ground?
Well, in some ways, what happened in Venice didn't look too different from other encampment sweeps I've seen in the past. There were sanitation trucks there were police on site. But the big difference with these new Inside Safe cleanups is every person gets offered shelter, and there's a long timeline for residents to relocate. In this case, people living in the encampment had up to 2 weeks to decide whether they wanted to go into a motel or leave the area. For context, the encampment being cleared here was just outside of a big Google office. So tech employees were coming back from lunch. Meanwhile, outreach workers were making the rounds to residents' tents. An unhoused man who went by the name of Haywire that I talked to said they offered him a motel room about 15 miles away.
They want to put me, I guess it's outside of Englewood or by Englewood. They want to put me over by Western and Imperial. But that's like 130th, you know? That's far.
He said he accepted the offer, but he was a little bit concerned about losing some of the support systems he had in Venice.
And that's like, it takes an hour to get here. I get my Suboxone here. I get my counseling here. I get my meds here. All my support groups are here. This is a therapeutic environment for me. I don't think it's cool that they're throwing me all the way over there. I think they're doing it just to get rid of us.
So people like Haywire who are moving into these rooms also had to agree to relinquish their tents and a bunch of their other items on camera. Most were sent to either that South LA motel, which is called the Los Angeles Inn and Suites, or the Marina 7 in Venice, which is a little bit closer. A couple people also checked into the nearby Bridge Home Shelter, including a woman I talked to named Rebecca Dannenbaum. She's lived in Venice her whole life, and she said she did not want to move that far away.
I'm AWOL, always west of Lincoln.
Dannenbaum's main concern about Inside Safe is that people experiencing homelessness will get their hopes up for shelter, which might then eventually be taken away. She saw that happen a lot with the motel rooms that the city gave out during COVID.
They're going to get used to this daily shower and the this and the that and so on and so forth. And then they pull the rug out from underneath them. And now they're back out on the street. And now they've lost their street skills. And now they've gotten a taste for something that they can't have, never could have, and shouldn't have been teased with.
At the end of the day, officials said about 96 of an estimated 100 people wound up accepting shelter at that Venice encampment.
Zoe, what about Rebecca Dannenbaum's worries? I mean, how long can people stay in the motels where they've moved?
So I talked to some officials from St. Joseph Center, which oversaw the outreach at the Venice site, and they said the goal is to get people on track to permanent housing in the next 3 to 6 months. In the meantime, there is provision for people to stay in these rooms and get services for up to 2 years.
So talk about what these motels are like and how the folks in Venice are settling in.
Yeah, so I paid a visit to South LA's Los Angeles Inn and Suites, where many of these Venice residents are for the time being. And it was kind of your run-of-the-mill budget motel. It was wedged between a food for less and an abandoned banquet hall. There were these faded murals of LA landmarks painted on the walls. Kind of seems like a place that was originally meant for people arriving from LAX. While I was there, I ran into Cristobal Sanchez, who came from Venice a few days earlier. She said having a roof over her head has been a huge relief.
I cried the whole rest of the day when they told me I got into this place, and I'm very grateful for it.
That's partly because she hopes this will be a stepping stone towards reconnecting with her two kids, who she hasn't seen in about 5 years.
I just want to get an apartment, and I want to be able to go to therapy again and because there's a lot of situations that happened to me out here being on my own, bad situations that I still had to work through to fix myself in order to be able to get my little girl back. So I'm going to do anything that the necessary steps to get there. Yeah.
Was that typical, Zoe, of what you heard? People, you know, glad to be indoors?
Yeah, most people I talked to at that motel said they were glad to be inside, especially because the weather was pretty rainy during the week the tents were being cleared. Folks were glad to still be connected with others from the encampment because they'd built a community together. However, Sanchez was not a big fan of the rules they were required to follow.
The only thing I don't like is that, I mean, we get bored in our rooms, you know, so, I mean, we're not allowed to go into each other's rooms at all. We could get kicked out for that. And I mean, I don't think it's necessary.
At the motel, I also ran into an older resident named Israel who was moved into the motel by St. Joseph Center before Inside Safe launched. He didn't want to give a last name, but he said he's already been there for 7 months waiting on permanent housing. And there doesn't really seem to be an end in sight. He was feeling a lot less hopeful than those newer residents.
I just met with this young lady yesterday, and supposedly my Section 8 vouchers application several times has been lost, or the paperwork wasn't done, or somebody something. Just a lot of things that I don't really understand.
So what's the long game, Zoe, for the city? I mean, are people going to be just cycled back onto the streets? How many empty motel rooms, let alone permanent apartments, are just sitting there waiting for the city to use?
So that is the question for both participants and service providers.
What happens when you don't have any more motel rooms? And if the end game is permanent housing, we all know that there's not enough permanent, you know, opportunities for people.
That's Tesha Uribe, a chief program officer for PATH, who worked at the Venice site.
So it's like, yeah, this is great for 2 years. And then are we really going to see, you know, a sustaining permanent plan where people end up staying inside?
Bass says she plans to offer everyone in the program permanent housing. She wants to use the emergency order she declared around homelessness to speed up that process by building more units and cutting red tape. She's also been talking a bit about the city using master leasing to secure more of these motels. But even she has admitted that the administration is building this plane as they fly it. However, that's not stopping her and Venice's new council member, Tracy Park, from taking a victory lap.
Tracy Park, Mayor Bass! Tracy Park, Mayor Bass!
On Friday, they showed up at a celebration at a cafe around the corner from where the Venice clearing happened. Bass spoke to supporters of the effort while she was there.
Knowing that the community of Venice has suffered for a long time, the people on the streets have been suffering, and the people who have to live or work near the encampments have been suffering. Yes. And so I am happy to say that we were able to move a number of people into housing.
A lot of housed residents and business owners opposed building a homeless shelter in Venice 3 years ago, and they've kind of blamed it for this big encampment that cropped up nearby. Some, like Donna Adams, were happy to see it go.
I feel really, really positive about this. And I just said to her, to Karen Bass, I didn't vote for you, but I will next time.
While she was addressing that crowd, Bass spoke a lot about the need to reclaim the streets and prevent unhoused people from returning. She said that she believes this can be done using outreach alone without criminalization or law enforcement. However, it is worth noting that Councilmember Park recently introduced a motion to designate the area off-limits to tents under the city's anti-camping ordinance 4118. That would mean people could get tickets for sitting, sleeping, or lying if they posted up near that shelter again. So that tactic may or may not turn out to be a regular feature of Inside Safe moving forward. We'll just have to see.
All right. KCRW's Zoe Matthew reporting for us. Zoe, keep us posted.
Will do, Steve.
Still ahead on GLA, the Me Too movement, uprisings in 2020, all kinds of changes were thought to be a help for Hollywood with its lack of women and people of color problem, especially behind the camera. But the numbers, which never have been great, actually went backwards last year. We're going to talk about it. on the other side of this.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
You see, this is my life. It always will be. There's nothing else. Just us. And the cameras. And those wonderful people out there in the dark.
It's Gloria Swanson in the role of her life as Norma Desmond. In front of the camera, the world celebrates and rewards women. Well, mostly younger, attractive women, but anyway. Behind the camera, Hollywood leaves a whole lot to be desired for women and for people of color. Recently, the Annenberg Inclusion Initiative released their latest report, and of the top grossing 100 films, only, get this, 2.7% were directed by women. Representation behind the camera actually went down last year. So what gives? What needs to change? Stacey Smith is founder and director of the Annenberg Inclusion Initiative over at USC. And Stacey, welcome to you.
Great to be here.
10 directors who are men to every one director who's a woman, and only two women of color directed top-grossing films last year. Talk about why getting more women and more underrepresented folks behind the camera is so hard.
The numbers are really abysmal, and we've been tracking them for quite some time now. And you might see, you know, fits and starts of progress. But this year we're seeing a reversal for any gains that were made over the last couple of years. And it's largely due to explicit bias and not giving access and opportunity to women, people of color, in particular women of color, when it comes to these top grossing films. There's a real distrust and perceived risk still around individuals that don't fit the white male stereotype.
Where women of color actually did direct, they directed some of Hollywood's best reviewed films, right?
Well, this is a great question and an area for exploration. When we look at the average Metacritic scores across the films directed by women of color, they're punching at a higher level. They're doing better than films by white men, films by white women, or films by underrepresented men.
There were the uprisings of 2020, the Me Too and Oscars So White movements. Remember those? They all seemed like they were going to usher in changes in the film and television industry. In 2021, there was an uptick. But then last year, the decline. So does that mean the momentum is gone?
I don't think the momentum is gone. I think that often Hollywood embraces a phrase that I like to use, which is adventures in missing the point. Oftentimes, executives greenlight content, and the only opportunities they give to women and people of color are on those films where the identity of the director and the identity of the lead character match. This isn't true of white men. They get to direct stories about white men and about anyone else. And one of the problems is that women and people of color should be directing those films, but they should also be given opportunities to direct stories by individuals in the lead that don't match their gender or race ethnicity.
I mean, but why stay? Why is it the backroom stuff? Is it the wink, wink, nudge, nudge? We're just, this is the way we've done it. This is how we've always done it, so we're just going to continue doing it. I mean, obviously they're sensitive. Hollywood is sensitive to this kind of stuff, right?
Are they?
Well, I mean, you would think there's a hashtag, right? Oscars so white and the Me Too and, you know, all of that
right.
stuff.
That's an empirical question. You can put a lot of money behind groups that you care about. You can say we're going to do better, but these numbers suggest that perhaps the rhetoric and the financial resources don't match. And why is that the case? Literature is really clear. Women leaders in particular are discounted. They're perceived as less competent. They're perceived to be not as ambitious, all perceived to be, and therefore not trusted to the same capacity as their male peers. The same is true when it comes to leadership with people of color. And so the biases that folks in Hollywood have been trying to attack are largely unconscious biases. These are all explicit biases. And until those green lighting teams change and the process by which they link directors to content changes, we'll see the same types of patterns in these data.
I mean, the green lighting happens right at the studio. In the executive offices, right? So, I mean, is it a matter of the executive offices are also so male and so white?
What's fascinating about this data is the one organization that seems to be doing a better job could still room for improvement. But Donna Langley's team at Universal Pictures is really, I think, the front runner when we look across different groups who's getting opportunities and access behind the camera to tell stories. Here you have a woman leading a company that greenlights, you know, a couple dozen films a year, really carrying the leadership of the entire film industry, right? And so your point is well taken. We need folks on those green lighting teams that not only look like the world, but value inclusion, and it's baked into the process of how you attach a director to a film.
The conclusion of your report, Stacey, states simply, quote, ultimately, the solution is also straightforward. Hire more women and people of color to direct top movies.
That's it.
Who would you like to hear that?
I think we quoted Taylor Swift's lyrics, right? Hi, it's me. I'm the problem. Executives at the top levels at each of the major studios or who they report to, it's time to uproot, change, and great, invest in pipeline programs. Great, invest in bringing in folks to their directors' programs and writers' programs. But my goodness, how many years do we have to see a downturn in these findings to see that folks need to be given an opportunity behind the camera? The data are clear who's punching at the highest level and who's not working. So this is a pretty explicit bias that these executives need to change.
Stacey Smith, founder and director of the Annenberg Inclusion Initiative. Stacey, thanks for your time. Thanks for talking with us.
Great being here.
Moving on now with Greater LA from KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis, and your latest surf report now from Instagram and TikTok.
Good morning, Venetians. It's Wednesday, and brr, we got a cold offshore wind, but we've also got some really fun 2 to 3 foot surf. Really clean, fun. People are getting some barrels this morning, and it looks great. This is the day to paddle out.
That's Glenn Walsh, also known as Glennis Venice, with his daily report on social media. Clear skies, you hear, brr, it's cold. If you haven't noticed, the state was pummeled with storm after storm, which wrought all kinds of havoc, damage to infrastructure, power outages, flooding, huge waves, but also created ideal conditions for riding those waves. Here's surfer Mitt Seeley at Topanga Beach just a few days ago.
This is probably the best swell in the past 25 years. Most consistent, biggest, best swell, yeah. We're definitely spoiled right now because we've had almost a week of solid surf and more than we normally get.
Unfortunately for Mitt, as you heard, those great waves are on their way out or maybe out altogether, 2 to 3 foot, as Glennis Venice said, and he's with us right now. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
So talk a little bit about, I mean, do you agree it's the best that it's been for surfing in decades? Can you describe what it's been like out there?
It's been incredible. Oh, my God. I mean, we've had 10 to 14 foot sets coming through Venice. breaking out beyond the pier and splashing us up on the pier. The pier is 40 feet above the water.
Yeah.
And we're getting wet. So it was pretty incredible. A lot of days pretty unrideable. But if you comb back through some of my surf reports, you'll see days where a couple of guys were getting out there and some girls and getting some huge, sick barrels.
What is it about the systems that move through? I mean, we've seen it in California before, obviously. The so-called atmospheric river, right? It just comes in from the Pacific, and it's storm after storm after storm, and it just riles up the sea. Is that what's happening?
Absolutely. But it's also the angle. You know, we're getting northwest swells coming from the Pineapple Express. It's really, you know, hitting up. You know, Mavericks is breaking at like 60 feet last week. And then that coming down this way, we're just getting incredible surf. Only like the best of the best should be out there. And a lot of them were, with cameras, with crews, getting some incredible shots and videos that you can watch on YouTube. There's a lot of them if you just type in El Porto surf.
To your point where you say, you know, experts should be out there, people who really know what they're doing when you've got waves like that. It sounds dangerous, right? 10, 15 foot waves, right?
Absolutely. It's like, dude, don't paddle out there on a wave storm. You know, you're going to probably snap that board in seconds and then be hoping that LA County lifeguards come rescue you, which I've witnessed a few rescues, a lot of leash snaps, a lot of board snaps.
You use term, and look, I am not a surfer. I would like to be someday, but I know it will be the end of me if I ever try that at my age. But I will tell you, you use a lot of terms that maybe go over people's heads, right? So let's talk a bit about some of the terms. You talk about, you know, barrel. What's a barrel?
That is a tube. So when a wave is breaking, when we have these offshore winds like we have, the inside of the wave gets very hollow and the lip on it is very thick and they just go long and it looks like you're in a barrel. You know, like it's just combing over you, combing over you, combing over you, and you're shooting through it like a rocket. And you just want to come out and be out of harm's way, ideally. But sometimes these dudes just take it on the head. And that means it lands on top of you. And I mean, that's when you can, like, you know, sprain a shoulder, dislocate, you know, a leg. It can get really gnarly. Gnarly means intense, Steve.
Yes, I'm well aware of what gnarly means.
Okay,
but cool. What about, all right, here's a simple one, Glenn. What about break?
It's basically where the wave is breaking and where you want to be. It's like the peak. The peak is like where you want to go. When you see, usually you want an empty peak, ideally. But here in Venice, every peak is pretty much called for. And you just paddle out and you know that, oh, this peak, this break is going to go right. Or this peak, this break is going to go left.
The waves might be great, Glenn, but we do know that during these storms, there's a lot of runoff from the LA River,
boy.
Right?
And we sure get
these LA County Health Department warnings, you know, don't go in the water for 2 or 3 days after a heavy rain, because a lot of just raw sewage is dumped into the Pacific.
Yeah.
Why would you want to go in there?
Dude, I saw rats all over the beach after that really heavy rain on Saturday, dead rats. From Marina Del Rey all the way to Santa Monica. Because you have to imagine, every sewer in LA is at maximum capacity, pumping water through it. And what lives in a sewer? Rats. It's been disgusting. People walk right over them and paddle out.
But, I mean, would you? Do you do that?
Yeah. I lived through COVID. At this point, I feel indestructible.
Glenn Walsh, a.k.a. Glennis Venice, who does surf reports on Instagram and TikTok. Glenn, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Can we just say, don't go in the water for a little while after a big rain? Come on. Unless you really want to and do your prepper. I don't know. Anyway, dead rats. It's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, California is now making it more expensive to put solar panels on your roof. How's that going to affect the local solar industry? That's tomorrow on GLA. Hey, have some thoughts for us? What's going on in your world? Maybe you have a story to share that's of, by, and for Greater LA? Do it at the website, kcrw.com/GLA, and subscribe to the podcast, too, while you're there. Juliana Mayo, Nihar Patel, Zeke Reed, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordall. all helped put the episode together this evening. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your time, your attention, and of course, your ear. Have a great night.